Do you enjoy teaching country dancing?
Oh yes, I do enjoy it. Of course, I've had the same group most of the time these days, so I know them really well and their limitations. And of course, we have not always a set group coming, so we have to have three couple dances and five couple dances as well as four couple dances. Yes, so it keeps us on our toes, and you can't always plan a program. If we have a party or a ball, we might plan a program, but otherwise you just have to see who's there and improvise.
When you say improvise, do you always call the same dancers each week?
Oh no. I have a repertoire of, it's probably 100 or so that I know really well, and there's some I can have a quick look at just to refresh my memory. So we always try and have different ones. Sometimes we have, if it's a newish dance, we might have the same one a few weeks running, and then I usually do the older dances, because some of the other groups people go to, they do the newer dances, and they like the older dances because they're always new dances being put forward.
You talk about we. Can you mention what we means?
Well, sort of the Scottish country dancers, and yes, the people at my group, and I have a couple of people that help me now. I thought, well, just in case I'm not there, or I'm not there permanently, we should have a few others doing it. We haven't actually got teacher certificates, but we are a social club. It's the Adelaide Scottish Country Dance and Social Club, and we don't do a lot of step practice and things like that. We're sort of into the dancing. And I became interested when I was at school, actually, in sort of the penultimate primary school year. Or junior school, you'd probably call it in Scotland. We had international dancing. We did a few dances from each country, like we did the German clap dance, we did the mazurka, we did a few dances from Scotland. I think it was probably the common three, the Dashing White Sergeant, Strip the Willow, and perhaps Deal Among the Tailors, I can't remember now. And then the next year, well, we even actually went to demonstrations of the schools and we danced there. But our teacher that taught us dancing was very taken that year by a private girls' school, and they had hoops and green sleeves and Grecian dancing. And then the next year we were supposed to stand there and pretend we were trees. And I didn't like that at all, nor did the other boys, I must say. I don't think the girls did either.
If you were going to describe country dancing to someone, what would you say to them?
Well, I'd say it's fun. Very good music, toe-tapping music. Gentle exercise, which you don't realise you're doing. And usually a great crowd of people doing it. So they'll make new acquaintances, often can be friends. People go bowling together. Well, because we're a social club, we go to a couple of lunches or dinners a year, and we have a picnic in the park when the club surprise chickens, and the others bring a dessert or a salad along, and we have a pizza night. And we used to make bus trips, but unfortunately to hire buses these days, it's gone through the roof. I'm not sure whether it's the price of petrol or whether their insurance has gone up. But, we don't go on bus trips now, but most of us got cars, so we can go to like a national park. And
It's awful. Yes. Sorry.
That's all right. Yes.
Well, what do you remember about the roots of country dancing?
The roots of country dancing. Well, I remember it was nearly died, became extinct in Scotland, but a couple of ladies went around and collected music. And in the early books, they often used to say, give the provenance of where it came from and roughly what year it was, like 1750s or... And you could tell that from the early dances, rights and lefts, and as I said, poussettes and up and down the middle, figures of three, reels of three, I should say. They were in, sometimes they were just variations of those few for the dances. But then, as the years went by, people started to devise new dances. We had a very good deviser in Adelaide, Lily Davidson. She even had a dance or two accepted by the society, put out in their booklets. We had the more complicated ones. And as I say, I like them, but if you get the same group of people all the time, it's fine. But if you get new people coming in, as I said before, we don't get too many of those now, it can be a bit awkward. You can't really say, although one, our May Sinclair, the first teacher I had, she would sometimes say, beginners have to sit out for this one. But we never do that on Saturday. We feel it's a, sort of a, well, derogatory. I wouldn't like to say, there must be a word for it. So we don't like to make out that people can't do any dance. We just say, this might be a bit difficult. Choose a partner that knows it.
What's the significance of standardising?
Well, standardising is very important because if you go to any other country, it'll be exactly the same. There are occasionally variations in dances, but they've brought them under control. So if I went to Tokyo and went to the dance group there, and they've got quite large classes in Tokyo, I'd be able to do the dances, provided they said what the name was in English or played some of the music, because the music usually goes with the dance and it's quite recognisable.
I imagine if you saw a few moves, you'd certainly pick it up.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And often, if you're a fairly advanced dancer, you have a couple of walkthroughs and you should be okay. And most classes have walkthroughs, so that people pick them up and know where they're going.
Have you any experience seeing some of these overseas dancers?
Well, we have a couple that come from England every year, and they come about this time of the year and stay for 2 or 3 months for the warm weather, and the garden can look after itself because of the cold, wet weather. And we used to have one that came from Scotland, but she now goes to Queensland. I think she liked it even hotter and steamier than Adelaide. And one of the group does have three Chinese ladies dancing with them. So we do get people from other countries come here. And of course, if they've got the society booklet that gives them the names of the groups and their addresses, if people come from New Zealand or South Africa, they'll know where to find the groups. Or if they contact someone from the Royal Branch, if that's the only one they know, they can give them the details of which nights and where the other dances are.
It's interesting that you can go to Tokyo, like you said, not speak a word of it, not understand anything anyone's saying, but you could dance with them.
Yes. Oh, yes. And Australians do go to New Zealand for their summer schools. They go and spend a week or a fortnight in New Zealand, with lots of New Zealanders, of course, but sometimes people from over the world. One time we had quite a few Canadians came to a summer school in Australia, and it wasn't in Adelaide, but they then did a tour of Australia and went to all the main cities and danced at them.
So what have you noticed? You've taught for many years now. Can you think of anything significant that's changed in that time?
Well, the age of the dancers, the average age would have gone up quite a bit. And it's not quite as formal as it used to be. At one time, people would wear kilts at the drop of the hat, but we usually only wear kilts for parties now, not for regular nights. And, well, the dances have changed. We're not doing the dances we did many years ago, but people are still enjoying it.
Describe some of the teachers you had who taught you.
Well, May Sinclair, she was very strict, a bit like one of the founders. She came to Adelaide once. She made us do step practice half the night. I thought that was a shame. She came all the way from Scotland. But that was, now she was doctor. Oh, slipped my mind. Shouldn't. And we used to have people come from Scotland every year to our winter schools, which meant they had to leave your summer behind. And they were often from the branch, and they would teach at the summer schools, and then they would go around Australia afterwards, giving their expertise to the different states, cities.
Did you attend winter school?
I never did. I nearly went to an Adelaide one once, but my father died just before it started, so I didn't go. And it's always been a bit awkward to get away. And I haven't been... I suppose I'm a homebody, really. I was born, as you could imagine, in London, and during the war, so I was actually born in a hospital. Not everyone was born in a hospital in those days. And I lived in an outer suburb of Greater London. It was it's now part of Harrow. And I did actually sing at St. Mary's Church at Harrow on the Hill when I was in the choir before I came to Australia. And we always lived in the same house. In fact, my mother was born in that house. When she got married, her mother moved next door. So my mother lived the whole of her life in the one house until she left for Australia. And then she only lived in one house while she was in Australia until she went into a nursing home.
How many years did you live in London?
12 years. 12 years I lived in London. And I did one term of grammar school before we left for Australia. And
Which school?
It was quite in London. It was Kilburn Grammar School. It was under the auspices of the Bishop of London.
What can you remember about the time there?
Well, I can remember the time there. It was very, well, you could say it was more or less a copy of boarding schools and things like that. You had different teams and cap badges and little buttons of different things. We did French and Latin there, but they lectured. The teachers often wore mortar boards, and they often wore the black gowns if they didn't wear the mortar board. And they lectured. When I came to Australia after just one term at a grammar school, I was surprised. The teachers were quite approachable and they explained things. Whereas they didn't, perhaps grammar school, you're exposed to be intelligent, so perhaps they didn't think they need to do too much explaining. Whereas in Australia, it was more or less general schools, and well, you had a wider cross-section of population, I suppose.
What feelings do you associate with those times?
Well, the times in the UK or
boarding school?
Well, I suppose it was more stressful than the Australian experience. And, well, because I had to travel there by train, you didn't get as friendly with the children because you only spoke to them at lunchtime. And then you all had to go your various ways on trains and buses and so on. There were a few that lived locally, but I would say that possibly only about a third.
Can you think of incidents that would describe your term stressful?
Well, I think it was because you were just on your own resources. Actually, it was rather like university, because, as I said, they just lectured. They didn't explain things too well, and they just assumed you'd know it all. And you did get some homework, but I didn't mind it, but I don't know if it would have got more stressful as the years went by. Probably not. I would have taken the travelling and all that into, I'd be used to it by then.
So you completed grammar school?
Oh no, I only did one term. So I did most of my secondary education in Australia. Yes, I did 5 years. In those days we did first year, second year, third year. Third year was intermediate, and then leaving honours. So, and then of course you'd go on to university if you qualified. And I did qualify, although I probably could have done better. I think it was because I had a very good memory in the early days, and I didn't have to struggle too much with homework. I didn't put much effort into it, and then of course when you got to university you had to put a lot more effort into it. But I got my degree eventually.
How did you find university experience?
Well, I didn't mind it. As I say, I would have liked someone to sort of make sure I did more work, but it then depended on the tutor. If I liked a tutor, I put a lot of work and effort into it. And if I wasn't too keen on a tutor, or they didn't sort of half ignored half their group, as some of them did, then I didn't work as hard. And I'd just get a pass instead of a good pass, or a credit, or a distinction. And occasionally, not even a pass.
Were you at the Jubilee Ball, 1983 or 86, whatever it was, in Burnside?
Yes, I was. Yes, I always went. I always go to the Royals' balls because I meet friends there I don't see so very often.
What can you remember about that place?
Probably that it was just very good.
What does very good mean?
Oh well, I enjoyed it, and I think, for a few years, and I think that was one of them, we used to have a photographer come. You could pay to have your photo taken, so I've got a few of me in different kilts and different stances and things like that.
Who would you say influenced you the most as far as teaching country dance?
Well, it's hard to say. They all had some say. Probably I like Lily Davidson. But I liked our group even when I wasn't teaching. So, as I say, we never had registered teachers, but they were good.
So essentially what you're saying is that you were self-taught.
Yes, yes. But it's easy. If you like the music and you like the dance, they're easy enough to remember. And then if you can do them well, you can pass that knowledge on to others. And because the people that were doing the Saturday night group were getting older and they wanted to not teach, there was a position already for me.
How did you learn the technique of teaching, of breaking down dance steps and so on? Where did you learn that and how did it take place?
Oh, well, it's almost natural because they're usually 8-bar phrases in the dances, and most dances are 32, so usually there are only 4 figures. So if people know the 4 figures involved, they can do it. But when later on the dancing became more complicated, you might have half rights and lefts and then half something else. And then you might get a new progression, like a chain progression, that you'd have to teach. But you'd only have to teach that a few weeks, and most people would have that if they came regularly.
Do you have preferences, your own personal preferences for dancers?
Oh, I do. I do like some dances because of the music, and some dances because it flows so beautifully. And
can you think of any?
Yes, there I am.
Here in the Botanic Gardens?
Yes. My mind keeps going blank.
Never mind.
But I do like Robertson's Rant. That's one from the old days. I think that's sort of a genteel, lovely dance.
My favourite is Kilt Maker.
The Kilt Maker. Yes, I did that the other night. Yes. That's good because you can see the pattern of them sizing them up, and then the weaving and the pleating and the wee burl to make sure the kilt flares. Yes.
But those dances that we mentioned have function to them, related to some Scottish culture. These modern dances don't have to relate to anything.
Oh, they don't, but usually people do something for a dance for St. Andrews, and then they usually have a St. Andrews cross involved somehow. I think St. Andrews of Brampton's a new one with that in it. Not quite as... the Saltire Society medley, I'm not sure how long that's been going. That's not a really old one, but they often have their... Or they're in honour of someone. Actually, someone's even... A couple of people have made up a dance in my honour. One's called Hey Arturo, because I often used to come in late and he'd go, Hey Arturo, when I came in the door. And he said I think it was my 60th birthday, he said, I'd like to do a dance for you. And I said, well, make it a two-couple dance, because we don't have enough two-couple dances for, you know, if we have awkward numbers. And he made a good one up, and we do it occasionally, and then someone made another one for me, but that's rather more complicated, so we really don't do that one, which is a shame, because it's a lovely dance. But then sometimes I think it looks boasting if I put a dance with my name on, and possibly the other groups haven't kept the copies they were given, so it'll probably just fade away in time.
Why don't you enter it in the book?
Well, I was going to, but I don't think the Society does so much of that now. I think they have so many dances, they don't bother to keep it, but some people put them on the internet, and it's amazing how people get the dances these days. Yes, technology. And some of them have it all programmed on little diskettes before they go, and others have it and they just press a few buttons and it comes up. But I still rely on the CDs. But we have a very good index, so I can find anything quite quickly.
Where do you get the CDs from?
We used to buy them from Scotland, and then there are suppliers you can get some from in Australia. And, well, because we have so many CDs, we haven't been buying too many lately. We've got enough. And because some of them do say, if you're not sure of a dance, what tune it has, they've got ones with just say reels, unnamed, and they've 32 bar reels, 8 times 32 bar, and you could just choose one of those if it doesn't have a recognised tune. In the Scottish country dancing at that time, there was all sorts of various Scottish clubs around Adelaide. There were clan societies, Caledonian societies, pipe bands, country dancing, Highland dancing. All these people wanted to have an organised programme so that people didn't clash too often. So we started up the Scottish Associations of South Australia, and I was a representative from the Scottish country dancing. We all had there and we got together and had made a constitution. We had meetings every 2 months, and every year we do a booklet saying who does what and when, so people can plan what they would like to see. And we usually make sure that if it's Caledonian societies, they're not having a function on the same night, unless of course they're way down south and way up north, when people are less likely to travel long distances to get to the other one. So that was one of the things that came out of that, and I'm still there as the treasurer. Can't get anyone to take it over. Anyone out there like to? And then they thought, well, we have a lot of different ethnic groups because we have migrants from so many countries over the years coming to Adelaide. They thought they would join the ethnic broadcasters. And so I, once again, I was on a committee to get the Scottish radio set up. And you had to have a language other than English. So we had a fluent Gaelic speaker to do part of the program. That way we could qualify to be on the ethnic broadcasting station. And I was a presenter with Gene Lumsden for a while. We did the English section while Finella Topping and Gavin Harper did the Gaelic section. And later on, I just became the treasurer. I think my voice was a bit non-Scottish for the radio. So, yes, and I'm still the treasurer of that one.
Who else is on the Scottish radio?
Well, they have presenters. These are the ones that do the programmes, and ordinary committee members. Jean Lumsden has come back and she still does a program once a month, and it's even gone from Tuesday lunchtimes to Saturday tea times, and she does that one once a month as well. And Gavin Harper's still there. He sometimes just drives the board, that means he doesn't actually do the talking. And there's Des Ross, that talks a lot about piping and plays a lot of pipe music, so they do get variety. And Jim Hay, they came from different areas of Scotland, so they have slightly different interests and different style tastes in music, so they get quite a wide variety.
Who's someone else?
Oh yes, Margot Murnitz. Margot's a lovely lady, comes from Scotland, and been in Australia a long time, and amazingly, she came from Italian heritage, but they were pure Scots. And her grandfather was put in a concentration, well, not a concentration camp, but aliens person camp during the war. And it was rather silly because he had grandchildren fighting in the forces, so they did let him go after a while. But yes, war could do funny things to different people. Then she came to Australia and she married a non-Scot, but she still has her strong Scottish accent, and she has a very good Scottish country dance group. I go there occasionally. They're a lovely, lovely group. Yes, she often, she runs a session once a month, and Saturday one as well, and her granddaughter, who's pure Australian, she helps drive the board sometimes to make sure everything goes well, or they sometimes pre-record it so that they don't have to be there if they're unavailable at that time.
Straight after I left England and emigrated to Australia, I was 12, and we did some country dancing on the boat, because in those days people went by ship. It was much dearer on planes, and most ships had a Scottish country dance group, because all you needed were a couple of records and like 101 Scottish country dances, or the 101, and they could just take it from there, because they were simple ones and they just put whichever track they needed on the records.
What are the odds of being on a ship and then finding you've got country dancing on there?
Well, it was commonplace in those days, because people weren't catered to quite so much. They had deck quoits and a few little competitions and a bit of entertainment, but it wasn't like the modern cruise ships. People weren't always on there for a holiday. They were definitely going somewhere. So there was a very good chance in those days. Now I very much doubt it. They probably have basket weaving or something else. Just depend whether you're going to Fiji or whether you're going to some other place. They might have something suitable for that.
What era are we talking about?
That would be in the early 60s. Yes, I think it would be early 60s, 42. Oh, no, it was mid to late 50s, yes. And then there was quite a gap because of the education and university. And after I'd been teaching in the country for 3 years, I came back to Adelaide, and I went to Young Women's Christian Association, had a class of Scottish country dancing, probably run by the Workers' Educational Association. And I went to several weeks, for the length of the course. And after that, I joined two or three of the groups, because there were several groups around Adelaide, and there's still a few even now. And the Saturday night one was a good one, very social, and they had older people in charge, and they needed people to take over, and I was sort of chosen to be one of the ones that took over, and for several years I ran it completely by myself. Well, we had a committee, but I did the teaching and the calling of the dances. But recently, the last several years, I thought, well, it's better to have a few reserve people, just in case I can't make it some days, go on holidays, or if something happened to me and I permanently couldn't go back to it, there'd be no one to take over and it might fold. I suppose someone might come in from another group, but we've got two or three people from our local group that help out and gives me a chance to dance sometimes, because when you're teaching, if you've got the right number of sets, you don't get to dance. It's only if they need someone that I join in.
You mentioned that you were chosen at the start to do this sort of thing. Now, what do you mean by chosen? Who chose you? How did you get chosen? And what time are we in?
Oh, well, I don't think too many other people wanted to do it. It was more or less Hobson's choice. I do have a voice that carries. A lot of people don't like fussing around with microphones, and they didn't always have them in those days. So my voice can be heard for the whole of the hall, usually. It's got quite carrying qualities. I should have been an opera singer.
What year are we talking about?
Well, that would have been... That would have been in the late 60s. That would have been in the late 60s. Yes. So I've been on... Yes, I was one of the foundation members of the club. We had to become an incorporated body. If you had more than a certain amount in the bank, you had to be an incorporated body. So that's when we officially became the Adelaide Scottish Country Dance Society. And I did serve on the Royal Scottish Country Dance Committee for a few years as well, and I attended their group quite regularly for the first sort of half or more of my dancing life. Yes.
Why were you on the ship?
Well, my father had a contract with the Weapons Research Establishment, and we had to come to South Australia to the Woomera Rocket Range. We lived in Adelaide, but he had to go up there every so often, and he had to sign a contract every 3 years. So I did go back 3 years later and came back to Australia again, and there were two Scottish country dance groups, one on each of those trips. So it was still popular in those days. But and father bought a house in Adelaide, and then my older sister got married and had grandchildren, so even when his contract, they wanted him to return to England, he didn't. He stayed in South Australia because his family was fairly well established in South Australia then.
I still can't get over the fact that there was country dancing on a ship.
Yes.
It just baffles me. I mean, I can imagine ballroom dancing, I can imagine perhaps the jive and the modern dancing coming in, but Scottish country dancing on a ship just baffles me.
Yes. Oh, well, there have been clubs going for quite a while, so possibly one of the entertainment officers had exposure to Scottish country dancing, and they thought it would fit in. They did have ballroom dancing, but that was more or less at night when they had parties.
Remember the name of the ship?
The first one I came on was the Strathnava. Sounds a bit Scottish, Strathnava, but I'm not quite sure of the others. It could have been the Oronce and another one. They were three different ships.
So you came over three times?
Yes. Oh, well, twice and went back once. Yes. And...
So the first time was a three-year contract, and the second one?
Was a three-year contract again, and then there were another couple of three-year contracts, but I didn't go back. My younger sister, who was born in Australia, went back, of course. And, because I was at university, they thought I mustn't, interfere with my education. Because it more or less took 3 to 4 weeks to get there, so it was more or less 3 months away from South Australia, and then of course I'd started teaching, so I couldn't go anyhow.
What were you a teacher of?
Pardon?
What were you a teacher of?
Well, I taught mainly the primary schools, years 4 and 6. When I first went into the country, because I had some university subjects, they wanted me to teach secondary schooling because they were very short of high school teachers. Or it was an area school I went to, which is a school where all the children went to, and they were bussed in from farming districts all around. And I taught, being the last teacher on, I taught Latin. Because in those days, some of the children, after they'd done a couple of years of high school, they went to boarding school in Adelaide, and the boarding schools were still teaching Latin. So I did Latin and Asian history and leaving maths. But they were even interested in statistics all those years ago. So because I had such small classes, I had to do first year social studies, which had about 50 odd children in it. Yes.
What area school was it?
It was the Lucindale Area School. That's down the southeast between Narra Court and the sea and Watertown and Mount Gambier. I thought it might have been in the Adelaide Hills near to Adelaide, but it wasn't. It's named after one of the governor's daughters, Lucinda.
So you lived there, actually?
I lived there for 2 years. Well, I boarded for 2 years. They had bus runs, and you usually boarded at the end of the bus run. I didn't have to drive a bus. There were enough bus drivers. But if one of them had been ill, I would have had to take over. And I lived on three separate farms. I lived with the Mackenzies, and their farmhouse burnt down. Then I went to the Campbells, so you can see the southeast had a lot of Scottish people there. In fact, they said you could go from Murray Bridge.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. Hello. To Mount Gambier, and you wouldn't go off a Scottish-owned land. And the third time I was with the Greats, and Mr. Greats came, he was of German heritage, he came from the Barossa Valley, but the land was cheap down the southeast often. So I was there for my last year. I used to go to the Lutheran Church with them.
So at the end of the 2 years, was it a sad moment?
Well, yes and no. I went back to Adelaide. I actually came off a horse, and I had to have sort of a chiropractic things to the back because it got stiff at times, and it was easier to have that done in Adelaide. So I went back to Adelaide, and I lived again with my parents, so you couldn't say I was really sad. I was quite happy and with all my friends again. And when I was back in Adelaide, I looked around for something else to do. And I tried yoga, but I didn't find it suitable. It was a bit antisocial, I thought. They wouldn't even speak, you know, before and after. I didn't expect them to while we were lying on the mats in the semi-darkness. But so then I went to the workers' education class at the WCA and took it from there. As I say, I went to several groups. There was Lily Davidson and Elizabeth, and the Royals, and there were others that different teachers took in different spots. And I went to several for a while, but as I say, it's gradually narrowed down to about two now.
In those days, you would expected to teach almost any subject in a high school, an area school. Was the teaching so comprehensive at uni that you could be a jack of all trades?
Oh, well, I hadn't done history at the university at that time, but you had a book on ancient history, you know, as long as you kept a couple of chapters ahead, you were okay. But I, having done Latin, I did know a reasonable amount of ancient history from that. And, social studies, likewise, there was a textbook. We were very textbook oriented in those days. In fact, you more or less had to follow the textbooks because end of the year exams were sent centrally by Adelaide, and all over South Australia they did the same exams. So everyone had to have exactly the same knowledge to be tested on.
You did say you taught maths. How were you equipped to do that?
Oh, well, I've always liked maths. I was always quite good at it. And once again, you had the books with the different sums in. You explained the different processes, like how to do square roots, which not everyone cottoned on to. You know, going back to basics and algebra, things like that. They were quite simple, but once again, I went back to the primary school, so it was no algebra and the higher maths involved. Although I did get a distinction in general maths at university.
I don't know what you can say, teaching farming children Latin seems like an oxymoron thing.
Oh yeah, but as I said, they went to boarding school. A lot of the farmers for the last 2 or 3 years, they sent their children to boarding school in Adelaide, so they'd get a higher education, and then they often thought the boarding school gave a better education than the government schools. Well, that was debatable. For very bright children, I think they did do better at the private schools, boarding schools, but then they might go on to university, because usually only one son took over the farm and the daughters had to have something. In fact, two of the girls repeated leaving, that's like year 11, until a job became available at the local telephone exchange. Because there was limited job availability, and I suppose their parents didn't want them milking cows and things like that. They wanted them to better themselves or marry a farmer.
We can look back on those times, can't we?
Oh, we can, yes, yes.
And laugh.
Oh, yes, definitely, and laugh. But,
and yet at the time, it was all normal?
Yes. Oh, it was very normal. You just didn't know otherwise. Although women were getting a stronger voice in things. There were more teachers, and there was occasionally a headmistress. So the women were coming into their own, starting to.
When you became a country dance teacher, you also had to join the branch. Can you tell me when that happened and what happened?
Oh, well, I joined the branch straight away after I'd finished the class, and I was in that for many years. Yes, but now I haven't been a member for quite a while, because I don't go to the Tuesday night one. I do something else on Tuesday nights now. But our club is an affiliate of the Royal Society, so we do get publication and newsletters, things like that. The books have been very handy to teach the newer dances.
What's your attitude towards dancing styles in general, and old versus new?
Well, the older dances were simpler. They're more up and down the middle and poussettes, whereas the modern ones have got half this and half that and half of something else. They're more complicated, but the dancers that have been dancing for a long time, they need a bit of a challenge, so they need the dances with the more complicated dances, which sometimes, if you get new people coming, it's a bit awkward, but we don't get too many new people coming now. Unfortunately, we're a sort of an ageing population for Scottish country dancing. I understand in Melbourne there are quite a few young people there, and I think in Queensland there could be too. But in South Australia, we're not getting too many new recruits. And usually they're the older people whose family have all grown up, and they want to find something to do, or they might have done Scottish country dancing at school and think, oh, I'll give it a go.